Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up today, we go to Lebanon, where thousands of Syrians have sought refuge since the beginning of the uprising last year. What one Catholic aid agency is doing to help. As the Church prepares to mark the beginning of Lent on Ash Wednesday, we take a look at Pope Benedict's message for the season, and Toronto's new cardinal will soon be heading home. We speak with him about some of the challenges in his Canadian archdiocese. Humanitarian agencies in Lebanon are gearing up to receive more refugees fleeing the conflict in neighboring Syria. The director of the Catholic charity Caritas Lebanon's migrant center, Najla Shahada, says more than 6,000 Syrians have crossed the border since the start of the uprising last year. But there may be as many as 10,000 Syrian refugees in Lebanon. Caritas's migrant center is coordinating its response together with UNHCR, the UN's refugee agency, and has helped distribute hygienic, clothing, food, and other materials to refugees who have found hospitality, often with poor family members in Lebanon. Well, Lebanon is roughly made up of 60% Muslims and 40% Christian denominations, and while the country has been hailed as a model of coexistence among different faiths in the region, Shahada explains how the Lebanese are divided over their support or their condemnation of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. I asked her just how many refugees are coming across the border into Lebanon and what is Caritas's response.
The number of currently registered Syrians with UNHCR is 6,133 this week.
And so, those are the official numbers, but what are the estimates of people who have not been registered with UNHCR?
So there are, some estimation, but we don't think that the figures are more than 10,000 overall.
Do you think that's a small number, or is it a large number for the number of Syrians who would be crossing over, fleeing the conflict there?
No, actually, it's a small number. Because we don't think that till now, a lot of Syrians has left their villages.
And why is that, do you think?
First, for security reason, they can't cross. Second, there is some concerns for Syrians to leave their homes and villages. They prefer to stay in order to preserve what they have, I think.
And it's been a very relatively peaceful few decades there in Syria, so people probably have not been used to conflict on their doorstep.
Yeah, definitely.
You in Lebanon, of course, though, are all too aware of what has been happening with your neighbors, but also because of your own experience with so many decades of conflict and bombings and so on. How are you all there at Caritas able to help UNHCR and the other aid agencies meet the needs of these incoming Syrians?
Well, since the beginning of the conflict in Syria, since March last year, Caritas has been actively involved with UNHCR in the coordination meeting. And Caritas has tried to fill the gaps in the needs of refugees. So we have sent social workers to be part of the need assessment interagency team. And additionally, we have fielded a team to assist with the distribution of non-food items. Caritas has so far distributed hygiene kits, which was really a big need for refugees. And we provided till date 2,500 hygiene kits. We distributed underwear for women and the clothes for baby, as well as blankets. This is from one side. then Caritas with Lebanon and Caritas Austria, in addition to embassies and consulates of Ethiopia, India, Indonesia, the Philippines, Madagascar, Bangladesh, Nepal, and Sri Lanka, held several meetings to develop a contingency plan and repatriation strategy for migrants also living in Syria and who might potentially need to leave Syria. So we have now prepared some shelters in case migrants will need to come to Lebanon to accommodate them in our shelter. And we have also invited IOM to be part of our coordination meeting to help us in the repatriation process.
Where are some of these shelters located, and have you got volunteers who are opening up their own homes to give hospitality?
No, actually, the shelters were part of a contingency plan with Caritas Austria, who negotiated with Convent in Lebanon, because we need big spaces. The numbers are not small, and we need convents to accommodate all those migrants who might come. So we have in Beirut 9 convents, and we have in the north 2, as well in the Beka also.
What are some of the biggest needs of these refugees as they come in?
Security is the first need. They need to feel secure. Second is food and hygiene kit. They are asking for this till now. And I should say that all the refugees who are now in Lebanon are living with host families. Many of them are living with relatives, so who are already very poor families.
How many would you say among these refugees have Christians numbered? I mean, are we seeing any fleeing of the country by the Christian community?
No, to be honest, the figures that I gave, the official figures of UNHCR, none of them are Christian. Among the 6,000, none of them are Christian. However, we have some Christian who are living in the suburbs of Beirut who approach Caritas asking for support. And we have till date 5 families, Christian families, who ask Caritas directly, but who are not registered with UNHCR.
But their families coming from what area in Syria?
We have some from Hummus and from Damascus.
And how are the Lebanese reacting to what's happening on their doorstep? I mean, we've seen some very terrible bombardments of the city of Homs in Syria and elsewhere. How are the regular Lebanese looking on at this conflict?
Well, we are politically divided, to be honest. So one part of the Lebanese are really against the regime in Syria and against what is happening to civilians, while some others are not talking at all.
And why are they not talking? Why? We've heard that Lebanon is really rather reluctant to condemn the regime of Bashar al-Assad, partly because they're afraid that the conflict could spill over into Lebanon, but also because of some political parties in Lebanon actually support Assad.
Yeah. No, actually, even if you have heard last week in Tripoli, there was a big fight also. So I think Lebanese are really afraid to get involved, and that's the position of the Lebanese government. They don't want to have the conflict again in Lebanon, and that's the reason why they are not taking a stronger position against the regime.
Now, we heard that the Arab League has thrown its support behind the Syrian opposition. How has that development been viewed in Lebanon? There are people who have been saying that could lead to civil war.
Yes, unfortunately, that's what people are saying. And especially with Al-Qaeda, who gave, also the order to support the not to support the regime, to be against the regime. So I think the Lebanese are very afraid and concerned. And mainly, I can say the Christian.
Why is that?
Because they think that it will have really some bad consequences on the demographic, situation in Lebanon.
So you're talking about Lebanese Christians?
Yes. They are very concerned and very afraid.
Lebanon, though, has for so many years been viewed as what Pope John Paul used to call it, a message of coexistence between so many different, 16 different faith denominations. Do you think that there is a real risk of that being overturned or an upheaval happening in Lebanon?
Well, I hope not.
Najla Shahada is director of Caritas Lebanon's Migrant Center. Concern for others, acts of love, and good works. That's the focus of this year's Lenten message issued by the Pope's charity office, Cor Unum, on behalf of the Holy Father. With the Lenten season officially beginning this week on Ash Wednesday, we take a look at the Pope's thoughts for this period in which Catholics are called to prepare for Easter through prayer, fasting, and good works. The four-page message offers a reflection on what the Pope calls the very heart of Christian life, charity. And the Lenten season is a favorable time to renew our journey of faith, both as individuals and as a community, with the help of the Word of God and the sacraments. This journey is one marked by prayer and sharing, silence and fasting, in anticipation of the joy of Easter. The theme for this year's Lenten message is a brief biblical passage drawn from the letter to the Hebrews. Let us be concerned for each other, to stir a response in love and good works.
These words are part of a passage in which the sacred author exhorts us to trust in Jesus Christ as the High Priest, who has won us forgiveness and opened up a pathway to God. Embracing Christ bears fruit in a life structured by the three theological virtues. It means approaching the Lord, sincere in heart and filled with faith, keeping firm in the hope we profess, and ever mindful of living a life of love and good works, together with our brothers and sisters.
To sustain this life shaped by the gospel, the message reads, it is important to participate in the liturgy and community prayer. And the passage from the letter to the Hebrews offers a succinct, valuable, and ever-timely teaching on the three aspects of Christian life: concern for others, reciprocity, and personal holiness. The message looks at each of these in turn, reflecting first on let us be concerned for each other, responsibility towards our brothers and sisters. The first aspect, then, is an invitation to be concerned, a verb coming from the Greek term katanoein, which means to scrutinize, to be attentive, to observe carefully, and take stock of something.
The verb which introduces our exhortation tells us to look at others. First of all, at Jesus, to be concerned for one another, and not to remain isolated and indifferent to the fate of our brothers and sisters. All too often, however, our attitude is just the opposite, an indifference and disinterest born of selfishness and masked as a respect for privacy. Today, too, the Lord's voice summons all of us to be concerned for one another. Even today, God asks us to be guardians of our brothers and sisters, to establish relationships based on a mutual consideration and attentiveness to the well-being, the integral well-being of others. The great commandment of love for one another demands that we acknowledge our responsibility towards those who, like ourselves, are creatures and children of God.
If we cultivate this way of seeing others as our brothers and sisters, the Pope writes, solidarity, justice, mercy, and compassion will naturally well up in our hearts.
The servant of God, Pope Paul VI, stated that the world today is suffering above all from a lack of brotherhood. Human society is sorely ill. The cause is not so much the depletion of natural resources, nor their monopolistic control by a privileged few. It is rather the weakening of brotherly ties between individuals and nations.
The message stresses that concern for others entails desiring what is good for them from every point of view, physical, moral, and spiritual.
Contemporary culture seems to have lost the sense of good and evil, yet there is a real need to reaffirm that good does exist and will prevail, because God is generous and acts generously.
Responsibility towards others thus means desiring and working for the good of others, in the hope that they too will become receptive to goodness and its demands, the message reads. And the Pope warns us of the danger that our hearts can become hardened by a sort of spiritual anesthesia which numbs us to the suffering of others. By way of illustration, the message points to the parable of the Good Samaritan, in which the priest and the Levite pass by, indifferent to the presence of the man stripped and beaten by the robbers, and to the story of a starving Lazarus who was ignored by the rich man. Both parables are examples of the opposite of being concerned, of looking upon others with love and compassion.
What hinders this humane and loving gaze towards our brothers and sisters? Often, it is the possession of material riches and a sense of sufficiency, but it can also be the tendency to put our own interests and problems above all else. We should never be incapable of showing mercy towards those who suffer. Our hearts should never be so wrapped up in our affairs and problems that they fail to hear the cry of the poor.
Reaching out to others and opening our hearts to their needs, Pope Benedict says, can become an opportunity for salvation and blessedness. Being concerned for each other, the Pope explains, also entails being concerned for their spiritual well-being. And the Holy Father reflects on one aspect of Christian life which he believes has been quite forgotten: fraternal correction in view of eternal salvation. While today people are generally sensitive to the idea of charity and caring about the physical and material well-being of others, the Pope writes, we are almost completely silent about our spiritual responsibility towards our brothers and sisters. Pope Benedict points to the early church and those communities that are truly mature in faith, which are concerned not only for the physical health of their brothers and sisters, but also for their spiritual health and ultimate destiny, as examples for true Christians to follow. And he reminds us that Christians have the prophetic mission to speak out against a generation indulging in evil.
We must not remain silent before evil. I am thinking of all those Christians who, out of human regard or purely personal convenience, adapt to the prevailing mentality rather than warning their brothers and sisters against ways of thinking and acting that are contrary to the truth and that do not follow the path of goodness. Christian admonishment, for its part, is never motivated by a spirit of accusation or recrimination. It is always moved by love and mercy and springs from genuine concern for the good of the other.
In a world pervaded by individualism, the Pope writes, it is essential to rediscover the importance of fraternal correction so that together we may journey towards holiness. Then the Pope speaks of the second aspect of Christian life, being concerned for each other, the gift of reciprocity.
A society like ours can become blind to the physical sufferings and the spiritual and moral demands of life. This must not be the case in the Christian community. The Apostle Paul encourages us to seek the ways which lead to peace and the ways in which we can support one another for our neighbor's good, so that we support one another, seeking not personal gain, but rather the advantage of everybody else, so that they may be saved. This mutual correction and encouragement in a spirit of humility and charity must be part of the life of the Christian community.
We are united to others in a profound aspect of communion. Our existence is related to that of others, for better or for worse, the Pope writes, affirming that the destiny and salvation of others directly affects our own.
Acts of charity towards our brothers and sisters, as expressed by almsgiving, a practice which, together with prayer and fasting, is typical of Lent, is rooted in this common belonging. Christians can also express their membership in the one body which is the Church through concrete concern for the poorest of the poor.
Finally, Pope Benedict reflects on the third aspect of Christian life, to stir a response in love and good works, walking together in holiness. Here, the Pope says, being concerned for one another should spur us to an increasingly effective love, something which is particularly pressing in this holy season of preparation for Easter.
The time granted us in this life is precious for discerning and performing good works in the love of God. Sadly, there is always the temptation to become lukewarm, to quench the Spirit, to refuse to invest the talents we have received for our own good and for the good of others. Let us accept the invitation today as timely as ever to aim for the high standard of ordinary Christian living. The wisdom of the Church in recognizing and proclaiming certain outstanding Christians as blessed and as saints is also meant to inspire others to imitate their virtues. In a world which demands of Christians a renewed witness of love and fidelity to the Lord, may all of us feel the urgent need to anticipate one another in charity, service, and good works.
Now, we sat down with Toronto's new cardinal, Thomas Collins, who received his red hat and ring in Saturday's consistory. The bright color red of the cardinal's new vestments symbolizes their willingness to shed their blood in giving witness to the gospel. In this interview, Cardinal Collins reflects on some of the challenges to the Church in his archdiocese. Among them, he tells Emer McCarthy, the courageous example of Christians who have fled persecution in their home countries to live in Canada.
In parts of the world, there's a lot of persecution. And I know as Archbishop of Toronto, I meet people that come from all over the world, and they speak of the suffering of their families back home. But also, of course, in some parts of the world, we have the danger of this kind of materialism. And that's what I think Pope Benedict is speaking of, about the need for a new evangelization.
In fact, you preempted one of my next questions. Canada is a very particular type of Catholic Church because it is very much a Catholic Church made up of the universal Church. You have a huge immigrant community. Both the founders of the original of the beginning of Canada were immigrants themselves, but also today you still accept a lot of people from other countries, particularly asylum seekers.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about the Canadian Church and what you will bring to the College of Cardinals as a representative of that church.
Well, our country is very diverse. We have, of course, the French-English dimension. We have also the native people, the First Nations, who have been there for long before people came from Europe. And that's a very important dimension of our life, especially I was very conscious of that as a bishop in Western Canada, but it's also true in Eastern Canada. And then we have people from the French tradition in Quebec, but also throughout Ontario and Alberta, where I was stationed, there's the French a reality as well, and then people more of the English language background. In the Archdiocese of Toronto itself, the original immigrants there were Irish, and people like my own ancestors came to that area. But we had many Italians and Portuguese in the early 20th century. Now there's just a very diverse reality. Because we're conscious of immigrants and refugees, the first settlers who were really, in many ways, refugees, I think it's important for the Archdiocese of Toronto to take that to heart very much. And so now we're facing Christians who are, or the reality of them being persecuted in many parts of the world. So it's a priority that I see is very important for our archdiocese, because we are safe. We are, you know, in an area where we aren't suffering what so many of our brothers and sisters are suffering, to be able to reach out to help them, above all, to help them stay where they are in their homeland, to live their Catholic faith with security and joy.
Would you be thinking in particular about the Christians from the Holy Land, from the Middle East?
Yeah, the Christians
countries.
In the Middle East are facing real problems, and the goal would be that they would stay in the Middle East, and that they have a right to stay there. This is their home. They've been there for 2,000 years. If it's impossible for some to stay because of the they cannot do that because they would be faced just a death, and you know, their homes have been destroyed and everything. And if they cannot stay there, then we want to give them a refuge in Canada. And so we have a very large refugee office that we've been increasing. And I've been trying to ask individual parishes to sponsor refugees. And our hope is, too, that the community in Canada, once they arrive there, will then be able to support their brothers and sisters back home and maybe give them the support they need to be able to stay there.
What would you then bring to the College of Cardinals as the biggest challenges facing the Universal Church today as a local bishop with that particular focus?
Well, I think the challenges are different depending largely on geography. I think in some parts of the church, the challenge is persecution, and they don't have a time in those situations to be quibbling about details of various things. They're facing dying for Christ. This is the fundamental witnessing to the Lord, and so that's a thing that's very healthy for people in rather more comfortable countries to have, and it's a great enrichment for the Archdiocese of Toronto when you have people in your parishes whose relatives have been shot, you know, for Christ. It certainly wakes you up. It makes you, and it helps us in a more comfortable part of the church where our danger is rather to be corrupted by a kind of a cynical world or something like that. That type of a thing. It certainly sharpens us up when you're aware that the person next to you in the church is from a country where people are shedding their blood for Christ. So I think the two of them help. They help us to, and we in turn in our own way can help people, try to help people who are in that situation. In my own local area, we're not facing persecution. We're facing some of the challenges. I think, again, this kind of idea that religious people should be to sort of behave themselves, be quiet, just don't speak up.
Keep their head down.
Keep their head down. Don't bother, you know, just if you want to pray, just go off to your churches and pray. But the key issues of life, the issues of life and death, the issues important that we don't perhaps have such a contribution to make. And I think that is just simply not true. And I think that we who do contribute enormously in those areas, we obviously, I'm not speaking of having some kind of a theocracy where the church is dictating anything really. We have a contribution to make. We have part of the picture. And I think we need to speak on issues. For example, euthanasia is becoming a big issue in my country and in other countries as well. That the sanctity of life from the first moment of conception to natural death, that's important, that's practical, it's real, it's human, and it is a place where we speak out. Not for this or that political party, we don't want to get involved in politics in that sense, but on issues of importance, of life and death, and of all issues of justice.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.